Well, I started something new, at least for me. It was somewhat based off of some encouragement from Brother Kip, and also somewhat on a dare from my wife. Well, really, it was a challenge. She didn't think I could do it, and so I set out to prove that I can. But it is a mild form, I think it's a mild form, of intermittent fasting. I know I've talked to some of you guys who've done various different types of fasting in the past, and you've talked about some of the benefits of those things and how it's impacted you and in the way that you feel and your energy levels, your cognitive performance. Certainly, intermittent fasting is supposed to support weight loss. It's supposed to help decrease one's appetite, which are things that I need to work on. In fact, it was interesting. It was kind of an epiphany last Sunday when we were talking, and Kip made the observation to a group of us who were sitting in their dining room that he said, the reality is nobody sitting here is ever really truly hungry, right? We don't know in our culture, in America here, we don't really know what it's like to feel hunger on any kind of consistent or regular basis. A lot of times when we feel famished or we get the shakes or we find ourselves consistently at night going back to the pantry or the fridge time after time after time to grab, you know, one more cookie or one more thing of chips or something like that, it's really not because our body is telling us, hey, you need some nourishment, you need some sustenance. It's because we've created a habit of, well, I eat at these certain time periods in the day. For me, I eat too much in the evening when I'm trying to sit down and relax a little bit before bed. And there are times where I'll make two or three trips into the kitchen and I'll make my round. I'll look in the fridge and I'll look around and, oh, nothing really looks good there. And I'll go over to the pantry and open the pantry and, oh, nothing really looks good there. And I'll close it and I'll go sit back down in the living room. Just to 5 minutes later, get back up and do the same circuit again, hoping that maybe something new will be in the fridge or the pantry that'll sound appetizing. But it was interesting to me, this realization that we eat not so much because our body is actually telling us we have to eat. It's because it's a habit that we've created. It's a routine. And so we snack, especially, more out of habit. Rather than a need for something. It's become a ritual for us, not something that is prompted by true hunger. In fact, when I was looking into fasting a little bit this last week, I read a couple articles that indicated that a typical healthy human being can go 30 to 40 days without eating food, just drinking water only. Before their body actually starts to, it's gone through and got all the nutrients from the liver and then broken down all of the fat, and it actually then starts to break down your muscle tissue, and actually starts, the way I would put it, your body actually starts eating itself, right? To the point where you begin to actually have symptoms of true starvation, right? Where you could actually starve to death or something like that. But typically for most of us, the feelings of hunger usually can just be ignored. Or if they're really getting at you, I found drinking lots of water does indeed help. Filling your stomach with water. The only downside of that in the evening is then you get up every few hours to have to pee because you've drunk so much water before you went to bed. But it's worth it. But anyway, all of that to say, this last week got me thinking about fasting and the fact that indeed it's biblical. I started thinking a lot about the fasting that people do in the Bible. And I really spent some time this last week digging into that. So I want to share with you some things related to the fruits of my study. The first question I had was, what exactly is biblical fasting? A short definition is simply the abstaining from food and or drink for a period of time. And it was typically done for a religious purpose, though not all accounts of fasting in the Bible were specifically for a religious purpose. Sometimes the fast would be from all food and all drink. For example, we read in Ezra chapter 10, and in verse 6, it says, "Then Ezra rose from before the house of God and went into the chamber of Jehohanan, the son of Eliashib. And although he went there, he did not eat bread nor drink water, for he was mourning over the unfaithfulness of the exiles." Now, that was a complete fast there. No bread, no water. We'll see a similar thing in Exodus chapter 34 and verse 28, where there Moses is up on the mountain receiving the law from God. And for a period of 40 days and 40 nights, he didn't eat bread or drink water. A complete fast for an extended period of time. Sometimes a fast involves only abstaining from certain types of food. For example, in Daniel chapter 10, verses 2 and 3. We read there, "In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks, and I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed." There, it doesn't seem to be a complete fast. He's just staying away from certain types of food. Tasty food, he says, meat. So maybe he ate vegetables only, right? All of us would agree. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts. I mean, that's food, but it ain't tasty food. And it certainly isn't meat. He didn't drink any wine either. Sometimes the fast would last only for a night. For example, earlier in Daniel chapter 6, King Darius, he fasts for a night while Daniel is in the lion's den. We read in chapter 6, verse 18, "Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him." He was worried about his friend Daniel in the lion's den, and so he didn't eat anything all night until the next day he goes to check on Daniel. Sometimes they last longer. We read there in Daniel chapter 10, Daniel fasted for 3 weeks. Sometimes people fasted for 7 days. Or, like in the case of Moses, 40 days and 40 nights. Jesus himself in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 2 says that he fasted for 40 days and 40 nights in the wilderness. And I love Matthew's account. It says, "And then he became hungry." I'm telling you this, after fasting for just one 24-hour period, I don't know how the Lord made it 40 days and 40 nights, because By Friday evening, let me tell you what, 5 o'clock, I was counting down the minutes to 5 o'clock because my mind was telling me it's time to eat something. And again, I know that that was a habit. That was a psychological thing. But I felt it. Jesus went 40 days without eating. And then he became hungry. But why? Why did people fast in the Bible? I think that's a more important question. And not just what it is, but why would people abstain from foods? Why would they do it for extended periods of time or only for a night? What is the purpose? Well, as we look at many biblical examples, we see there was a whole range of reasons why people fasted. So, for example, we see examples of people fasting when they're saddened by an external circumstance, right? Something outside of themselves, something bad happens, and so they fast. A lot of times it's associated with mourning. For example, the men of Jabesh-Gilead mourned and fasted for 7 days after burying King Saul and his sons who died in battle against the Philistines. David, on his part, when he hears the news that Saul, the king, and his best friend Jonathan, the son of the king, had died in battle, we read in 1 Samuel chapter 1 that he tore his clothes, he mourned, he wept, and he fasted until evening. In remembrance of his friend. In Nehemiah chapter 1, we read about him when he hears about the sad state of the city of Jerusalem and how the people there are distressed because the walls are broken down and the gates are burned with fire. He sits down and he wept and mourned and fasted and prayed for days. Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 4 and following. In the book of Esther, we read about when the news of wicked Haman's plot to exterminate all the Jews throughout the Persian Empire, when that becomes known to the Jews, we're told that the Jews in all the provinces, throughout all the provinces, responded with fasting and weeping and wailing, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. When bad things happen, we see people resort to fasting. It's often associated with the idea of mourning there. But we also see people fasting as an act of penitence. That is, a sorrow over or for their own sin, their own faults, their own shortcomings. So again, in Nehemiah chapter 8 and 9, Ezra has read the law to the exiles who have returned. And they're going to have this great celebration, but as they're reading the law, they realize we are not living up to the covenant that God has made with his people. We're failing miserably. And so we read in chapter 9 and verse 1 that the people assembled with fasting in sackcloth and with dirt upon them, humbling themselves before God to seek what should they do to rectify this situation. Even foreign peoples fasted. For example, you remember Jonah, the prophet, the guy who got swallowed by the big fish and then vomited up. He was supposed to go to the foreign city of Nineveh and proclaim God's destruction against it because of their wickedness. And when he finally goes there and he preaches throughout all the city of Nineveh, the people hear the message that Jonah is preaching, that God is going to destroy them, and word gets all the way to the king, and the king of Nineveh declares a universal fast among all of his inhabitants of his city. Even the animals were forbidden from eating, and he tells them that they're to cover themselves with sackcloth, that they're to call earnestly on God, turning from their sinful ways in the hopes that God might relent from the calamity that he promised to bring upon them. And as the story of Jonah bears out, God indeed sees their humbling of themselves, and he does relent from the punishment. Even wicked King Ahab, when he found out that God was going to wipe out his entire family, humbled himself with fasting before God. And God took note of his humility. We also see occasions when fasting is used as a way of seeking God's favor. Jehoshaphat, when threatened by foreign enemies, declared a fast throughout all Judah that the people might seek the help from the Lord. In Ezra chapter 8, when Ezra is getting ready to set out from Babylon and make the arduous journey back to Jerusalem, he doesn't request a military escort from the Persians. He says, nope, my God's got this. But before they set out on their journey, Ezra declares or proclaims a fast, humbling themselves before God to seek from him a safe journey from Babylon back to Jerusalem. Even Samuel the prophet led the people of Israel in a fast, confessing their sins before they would go into battle against the Philistines. A battle on that occasion in 1 Samuel chapter 7 in which God routed the Philistines before the Israelites. It seems that the Israelites didn't really do much in the battle. God's the one who took care of the enemy. Oftentimes we see fasting done in preparation for big undertakings. So for example, back in the book of Esther, when Esther was going to go approach King Xerxes and ask him to do something about Haman's wicked plot, well, it was unlawful for her to come before the king unless she was summoned. And yet she's going to go and approach him anyway. But she requests of her uncle Mordecai and the rest of the Jews in Susa that they would fast for 3 days and three nights along with herself and her maidens before she goes in and puts her life on the line for the sake of her people. In Acts chapter 13, turn there with me, Acts chapter 13, we read about the church in Antioch of Syria. Acts chapter 13 and verse 1. Now there were at Antioch and the church that was there prophets and teachers, Barnabas and Simeon, who is called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene and Manaen, and they who had been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch and Saul. And notice this verse 2. While they were ministering to the Lord and fasting, the Holy Spirit said, set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work which I have called them. And when they had fasted and prayed and laid their hands on them, they sent them away. There we see we're getting ready to send Paul and Barnabas out on this preaching trip, on this mission for the Lord. And before they do, they pray and they fast together. And they put their hands on them and say, go with God. We're with you. We're with you in this endeavor. And indeed, on that preaching trip, as they go through the province of Galatia in Acts chapter 14, they travel back through all of the cities. And one of the things that they do in verse 23, it says they have appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed with fasting, and they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed. And that's another thing that's interesting to me as we look through Scripture. Oftentimes we see fasting associated with prayer. So many times it's they were praying and fasting, or fasting and prayer put together hand in hand. And I think that's because fasting was, from a biblical perspective, it was an expression of humility. David would say in Psalm 35 and verse 13, "But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer kept returning to my bosom." David says that that was the way that he humbled his spirit, humbled his soul before God, was with fasting. In fact, for the Jew, fasting and humility were almost synonymous with one another. So much so that by the first century, the feast of the Day of Atonement, which was an annual remembrance for the Jews, they simply referred to it as, quote, the fast. But what's interesting to me, if you go back to the book of Leviticus, and look with me, for example, in Leviticus chapter 23. In Leviticus chapter 23, beginning in verse 26, we have some instructions for the Israelites about how they're to observe this Day of Atonement. And what you're going to notice as we read through this text, nowhere are they specifically called upon to fast, but they are told to humble their souls. Notice verse 26, "The Lord spoke to Moses saying, 'On exactly the 10th day of this 7th month is the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you, and you shall humble your souls and present an offering by fire to the Lord. You shall not do any work on this same day, for it is a Day of Atonement, to make atonement on your behalf before the Lord your God. If therefore any person who will not humble himself on this same day, he shall be cut off from his people. As for any person who does any work on this day, that person I will destroy from among his people. You shall do no work at all. It's to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwelling places. It is to be a Sabbath of complete rest for you, and you shall humble your souls. On the 9th of the month at evening, from evening until evening, you shall keep your Sabbath.'" God didn't say you're to fast. But the Jews by the first century are calling the Day of Atonement the fast. That's because in their mind, the way that you humble your soul before God was by fasting. And so what we're seeing as we look at all of these various examples is that fasting was oftentimes used in some way to draw near to God, to humble yourself before his presence, to present your petition. Or maybe it's just your cares and your concerns to seek his favor and to try to make yourself right before him. The question I have is, should we fast today in the same way? Well, it's interesting. Jesus was actually one time asked by the disciples of John why his disciples didn't fast. In Matthew chapter 9, verses 14 and 15, we read, "The disciples of John came to Jesus asking, 'Why do we and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?'" There seems to be a distinction there between John's disciples and the religious people of the day, the Pharisees. They're all fasting. And yet when we look at Jesus' disciples aren't fasting. What's going on here, Jesus? Why aren't your guys fasting like the rest of us? Notice Jesus' response, verse 15. He said, "The attendants of the bridegroom cannot mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them, can they?" When your buddy is still with you, when he's not yet married, he's still a single guy and you're running around, you're having a good time, you're not sad about that. But when he gets married and he's taken away from you because now he belongs to his wife, well, then that's a time to maybe mourn a little bit. And so he says to them, he says, "The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast." Jesus says, even though my disciples aren't fasting right now, there's going to come a time when it would be appropriate for them to fast. Now, I will make this observation about this text. Jesus is not here laying upon his disciples a requirement to fast. He's simply saying that there is going to come a time when fasting may be an appropriate response or action. But Jesus says some more things about fasting that I think are pertinent to our question, should we fast today? I think Jesus gives permission to fast here. He's not saying you have to do it. You could if you wanted to, if the occasion is right. But you need to make sure when you fast that you do it for the right reason and in the right way. Turn back just a couple chapters to Matthew chapter 6. And at verse 16, Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Whenever you fast, do not put on a gloomy face as the hypocrites do, For they neglect their appearance so that they will be noticed by men when they're fasting. Truly, I say to you, they have their reward in full. Jesus says, if you're going to fast, make sure you do it the right way and for the right reason. He says, don't make it apparent to everybody by having a gloomy face and disheveled hair and all this kind of stuff. And, oh, yeah, I'm fasting. You know, look at me, everybody. I'm fat. Hey, did you notice, Kevin? I'm fasting. Did you notice that? Just wanted to make sure you saw it, right? That's not, Jesus says, don't do that. Why would he say that? Well, if one of the purposes, or maybe the main purpose of fasting, is to humble yourself before God, isn't it kind of contradictory? Isn't it hypocritical to then use fasting, which is supposed to be a humbling of yourself, to draw undue attention to yourself? Hey, everybody, look at me. Look at how humble I am. Make sure you notice me because I'm so humble. Right? That doesn't make sense. It's self-defeating. And so Jesus says here, don't be like that when you fast. Fasting isn't supposed to be used to telegraph our righteousness before men or to make ourselves look good or pious or religious. He says in verse 17, but when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face. Just do like you normally do every day. Why? So that your fasting will not be noticed by men, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. So if we're going to fast, understand, fasting is not something that's supposed to be drawing attention to me. It's supposed to be something that's between me and my God. Okay? If we're fasting in a religious sense. All right? Because we're trying to draw closer to God. A very similar warning to this is given to the Jews in the days of Isaiah. If you turn back to Isaiah chapter 58, it's kind of an instructive passage regarding fasting and what kind of fasting God is interested in. Verse 1, God is telling his prophet to cry loudly, do not hold back, raise your voice like a trumpet and declare to my people their transgression and to the house of Jacob their sins. He's saying, Isaiah, I want you to go and I want you to make sure that my people know they're not doing the right thing. Call attention to their transgression. Well, what were the people doing? Verse 2, it says, yet they seek me day by day and delight to know my ways. As a nation that has done righteousness and has not forsaken the ordinance of their God, they ask me for just decisions. They delight in the nearness of God. And who doesn't delight in the nearness of God? That's what they want. They want God to deal justly and righteously with them. They want to be close to him, or so they say. The problem is they're not paying attention to God's ordinances. They're not actually doing what God would require of them. And so they are pretentiously seeking after God, seeking some way. They want the blessings that come from God, but they're not really that interested in following God. They're going through the motions. In fact, verse 3, they say, why have we fasted and you do not see? Why have we humbled ourselves and you don't notice? Behold, this is the reason why. You're going through the motions. You're fasting. You're humbling yourself before God. And God's not paying any attention. They're saying, why, God? Why aren't you noticing? This is why. Behold, on the day of your fast, you find your desire. And you drive hard all your workers. Yeah, you're abstaining from food. You're observing your ritual fast. And saying that you're humbling yourself before God, but you're not really denying yourself anything. You still have everything that you want. And in fact, you get it by making your workers continue to work really hard. I know I'm having a fast, but you better get out there in the fields and do your work. Because I need to get mine. He goes on in verse 4 and he says, behold, you fast for contention and strife, and to strike with a wicked fist. You do not fast like you do today, to make your voice heard on high. The reason for fasting was to humble yourself before God, to gain an audience with him, have the proper attitude when you approach it. And God is saying, that's not why you're fasting. You're not really fasting to please me. You're doing it for yourselves. He goes, Is it a fast like this which I choose? A day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed and for spreading out sackcloth and ashes as a bed? Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? That was what they were doing. They were putting on sackcloth and ashes, and they were sitting in the dirt, and they were bowing down, and, oh, Lord, you know, going through all this big show of everything. And God says, is that really what you really think that's what's pleasing to me? You really think that that's what I'm most interested in? Well, if it is, they would be wrong, because he goes on in verse 6 and he says, this is what I'm really concerned about. Is this not the fast which I choose, to loosen the bonds of wickedness and to undo the bands of the yoke and to let the oppressed go free, to break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into the house, when you see the naked to cover him and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Isn't that interesting? God says, you think that I'm interested in you abstaining from food and from drink and putting on the sackcloth and the ashes and bowing yourself low? He says, you can go through those motions, but you're still proud. You haven't really humbled yourself. What I'm more interested in is that you would do right, that you would seek to avoid sin, that you would serve other people, that when you see someone in distress, you would go and you'd help them. That's what true humility looks like. Not a pretentious fast that's for show. And he says, if you would do this, if you would have this kind of right, self-sacrificial, serving attitude, then guess what? I'll hear you. He goes on in verse 8, he says, then your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will speedily spring forth, and your righteousness will go before you. The glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry, and he will say, here I am. If you remove the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of wickedness, and if you give yourself to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light will rise in darkness and your gloom will become like midday, and the Lord will continually guide you and satisfy your desires in scorched places and give strength to your bones, and you'll be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins, and you will rise up the age-old foundations, and you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which to dwell. You want good time? You want me to hear you, God says? Don't think that it's through a pretentious fast. Actually humble yourself before me. And so that illustrates to me that maybe God's not so much interested in us abstaining just from food and drink in our efforts to humble ourselves and draw close to him. Perhaps there are other things that might get in our way of pursuing God. Notice, for example, in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and in verse 5, Paul is speaking to husbands and wives, and he's talking in this context about their obligation to fulfill the physical needs of their spouse. But he makes the observation in verse 5, he says, stop depriving one another. Don't withhold yourself physically from your spouse, except by agreement for a time, so that what? So that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Isn't that interesting? If it's appropriate from time to time for husbands and wives who have an obligation to fulfill the physical needs of the other, to say, you know what, we're going to take a break so that we can specifically focus on prayer and seeking God. If that's appropriate, I would ask the question, are there not other things that it would be equally or more appropriate for us to abstain from or to fast from so that we might focus more on seeking God and serving him? What about TV and video games? How much time do you spend every day, every week, every month watching TV? Or playing video games? How much time do you spend on a screen? Could you not take a fast from that? I think we might be surprised how much time we have then to pursue something more worthwhile. What about social media? Who's got Facebook out there? Who's on Instagram? Who's got TikTok? I don't have any of that stuff, but I got YouTube on my phone. YouTube's got this new thing called YouTube Shorts, basically YouTube's version of TikTok. Because you sit there and you scroll through, these videos are like 30 seconds long. But before you know it, what's happened? An hour has passed. And what have you accomplished?
Nothing.
That's right. Maybe if you're lucky, you saw one or two videos that made you laugh. Most of the time, it's garbage. Most of the time, it's just stuff that's depressing. Or worse, it's stuff that will tempt you away from God. Couldn't we fast from social media? There's so much negativity on there. There's so much, oh, the world is ending, and oh, it's such a terrible, depressing place, and oh, or I hate you, and I hate you, and I, you know, it just, couldn't we take a fast from that? We might be surprised how much time we have to read our Bible, or to meditate, or pray, or spend time with actual people face to face, if we weren't on Facebook all the time. What about the news? I'll tell you, this is one, I've gotten to the point now where I don't watch the news anymore. Number one, you can't tell who's telling the truth. There's so many conflicting stories, and if you really want to know what's going on, you have, I mean, it's a full-time job hunting down every fact and every lead and every story and trying to figure out who's telling you the truth and who's twisting your ear to manipulate you to get you to do what they want you to do. It's exhausting. I mean, at best, can't we agree that the 24-hour news cycle is just exhausting? And yet, how many of us are slaves to the news? Got to get my news. I got to know what's going on. I got to see what's happening. What about our phones? And here I'm not talking about all of the screen time that you spend on your phone. I'm just talking about using a phone as a phone to text. Or to make a phone call. How many of you feel like you have to have your phone on you all the time? We're afraid we're going to miss a call. We're going to miss a text. Oh, they texted me. I've got to text back right away. Right? It's okay to be unavailable. It's okay to not respond immediately to everybody who's trying to get your attention all the time. That's okay. Maybe we need to fast from our phones. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's eating out, or maybe it's shopping. Maybe it's music, or maybe it's watching your favorite sport. Whatever the thing is, whatever it is that's consuming your time, that's taking up your time, that's keeping you distracted and unfocused on God's things, maybe we should take a fast from that. Now, some of this may seem like an extreme amputation. How could I go without these things? I'll starve! Well, let me assure you, you're not going to die if you skip a day or two of television. You're not going to die if you take a 24-hour break from Facebook or TikTok. You're not going to perish if you miss the nightly news and don't catch the weather forecast. Guess what? The weather will be what it's going to be, whether you see the forecast or not. I think as I've reflected on this, it's kind of like being hungry or being hungry. We're not really hungry when we go to the pantry. We're not really starving at lunchtime and then 5 hours later at dinner time. That's just when we built our habit of when we eat. That's when I go to the pantry every night. And we've made all of these other things a habit. And we feel like if I go without it, it's going to be the end of the world. No, it's not. We've trained ourselves to fill our time in that way. And if we were to cut some of those things off, it really isn't that drastic. But even if it was, if it helps you to draw closer to God, wouldn't that be worth it? I seem to remember Jesus saying in Matthew chapter 18 something along those lines. In Matthew chapter 18, beginning in verse 7, I think it is, "Woe to the world because of its stumbling blocks, for it's inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to that man through whom the stumbling block comes." Notice what he says in verse 8. "If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. It's better for you to enter life crippled or lame than to have two hands and two feet to be cast into eternal fire. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and throw it from you. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be cast into the fiery hell." And guys, the fasting that I'm suggesting is not nearly as extreme as cutting off a hand or plucking out an eye. But Jesus says, if that's what it takes to make it to heaven, it's worth it. And so let me finally suggest to you that with whatever you choose to fast from, make sure that you fill that extra time that I'm sure you'll find in your day and in your week. Fill it with something productive. Fill it with prayer. Fill it with reading and meditating on God's scriptures. Talk with your family. Talk with your friends. Talk with your neighbors about what you're reading and studying from God's word. Seek opportunities to serve those around you. Or maybe just spend some quality time with those who truly are the most important in your life. Let me wrap up the lesson by reading to you James chapter 4, verses 5 through 10. I would have never connected this passage with fasting until I've done this study, but think about it with me for a second. James chapter 4, beginning in verse 5. "Or do you think the scripture speaks to no purpose, that God jealously desires the spirit that he's made to dwell in us?" God wants a relationship with us. He wants to have us close to him. But he gives a greater grace. "Therefore," it says, "God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to who?" The humble. "Submit, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he'll flee from you. Draw near to God, and he'll draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Stop doing the things that are wrong, and set your mind, focus your mind on serving and seeking God. Be miserable and mourn and weep." How many times did we see fasting associated with mourning and weeping? "Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord." How did David humble himself? He humbled his soul with fasting. "Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord and he will exalt you." Let's make sure that whatever we're doing, that we're doing what we can to draw closer to God. As James indicates here, that's certainly going to involve humbling ourselves before him. And it may even involve fasting from certain things so that we can be more singly minded in our focus, in our pursuit of God and his things. And so this morning I want to encourage us, if you haven't tried it, try a little bit of fasting, because after all, it's biblical.